Greetings and welcome to Edgy Ideas, the podcast that explores what it means to live the good life and create the good society in our disruptive age. My name is Simon Western, and I will be talking to invited guests about diverse topics, exploring social conscious and unconscious dynamics and desires. A very warm welcome to this 100th edition of Edgy Ideas podcast. My name is Simon Western. I am the Chief Executive of the Eco Leadership Institute, which sponsors Edgy Ideas. I started this podcast during the COVID lockdown, and our first episodes focused on psychosocial dynamics, thinking about how the pandemic impacted on different countries around the world. We interviewed people from the US, from Russia, and many countries in Europe. We broadened the scope of the podcast, and now the purpose of Edgy Ideas podcast is stated as to explore what it means to live a good life and create the good society in our disruptive age. 5 years later, with over 60,000 listeners, Edgy Ideas is thriving. Our podcast and guests pay attention to power, and we bring a psychoanalytic lens to observe how the unconscious speaks through us. To celebrate this century episode, we're recording this with a panel of guests from our special event at the Claretian Missionary Sisters Convent in Reus in Spain. The convent has been beautifully hosting our event called The Soul at Work. Here we are addressing the vital question of how to re-enchant the workplace. I will now invite our four panel guests to briefly introduce themselves, and then we will discuss the soul at work. Leslie, would you like to say hello?
Of course. Hello. I'm Leslie Brissett. I'm an advisory board member at the Eco Leadership Institute.
Hello, I'm Eleanor Moore. I live here in Spain, and I'm part of the core team of the ULEX project, which helps support social movements with capacity building.
Hi, I'm Chris Yates. I'm an industrial psychologist. I've worked in talent roles at a number of organisations, father, QPR fan.
Hello, I'm Hetty Einzig. I'm on the Eco Leadership Institute faculty for the diploma, and I'm a leadership coach.
So we've been here for 2 days, we're here for a third day tomorrow, and we've been trying to explore and make sense of what it means to bring our souls to work and what it means to think about how our souls are impacted by work. So Leslie, do you want to share some initial thoughts, and then we'll just have a discussion with the panel?
Yeah. So initial thoughts. For me, organisations around the world are in crisis at the moment, and what we need is a new frame to think about both what it means to lead and follow in an organisation and what it means to be human at this time of major disruption in the world. And I think this conversation at the Eco Leadership Institute is pioneering, and I think it is pioneering territory, about what does it mean to bring and engage your soul at work, not just your mind and your body, but your essence. So that for me is the starting point, really.
Who'd like to pick up on that?
I just want to agree that I think this is both pioneering and very vital work. And part of, I feel, what we've been doing the last couple of days is trying to find a language to talk about these things. What I'm particularly interested in is what I call everyday spirituality. How do we bring back these kinds of conversations rather than have them at the edge of society in special places with special people, bringing them back into our lives? And what does spirit mean? What does soul mean? And how can we talk about it in a way that's meaningful?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think this is a very special event.
I think the timing is really relevant to pick up on Leslie's point. a lot of the models or theories that we use to think about organizations are based in a time of labor. Increasingly, we are a connected society. Many of the jobs that we think about traditionally are going to evolve or go away in the coming decade. And to both your points, I think we need new language, new frames to think about it. The world of work impacts bigger society in ways that most people can't imagine. And I think this is a great opportunity to reimagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, it's an interesting entry point because my work was kind of born out of this question of what does it mean to show up and live a engaged and soulful life, and then that has become work in a way, in a vocation. So I don't quite hold the frame in the same way, but I do. I think that work can provide a container, and it also can be really alienating. And there's something been really useful for me in coming here and spending this time in the last few days is connecting with a spectrum of people who experience work and soul and questions of spirit in such different ways, and that is outside of my normal work container, and understanding what work means. And we had various conversations about, is it soul at work, as in putting your soul to work? What is work? What is soul? What is spirit? But this question of how we organize ourselves, what is an organization as a collection? And what do we want to shape and form those organized entities into being, and what will they represent in us, and what will they speak to for our future and our future generations? It's been really tangible in the unpacking of, for me at least, of what's happened in the last few days.
I think what's been interesting for me is these two words, soul and work, I think they often get separated. So we think about, we go to our place of faith or spirituality or our yoga practice for our soul work, and then we go to work to do proper work, you know. And here we're trying to think about these two things together. And part of the discussion has been, well, there's many forms of work. There's manual labor, there's cognitive labor, there's emotional labor, there's unpaid labor, there's paid labor. So what we're talking about, and also to address that question of the soul at work, often goes into a gooey place, a soft, gooey place, sort of let's all be nice to each other, and let's kind of share the love. But actually, work can be soul destroying. You know, there's still modern slavery, there's alienation at work. Work can be very difficult. And on the other hand, it has a potential to be prayerful, soulful, to be a vocation, to support our identities, our engagement with others, our relationships. It can be a place of community. So all these things. And I just wondered what you think about your actual experience in work, where you've kind of seen the soul be present at work, or in what ways?
I can kick off. So I changed my career trajectory after encountering a group relations conference at the Grubb Institute. And the Grubb Institute was founded in the 50s to apply Tavistock Institute thinking about groups, systems and organizations to faith communities. But they're also then working in traditional organizations. And I encountered this conference that was looking at role, being, meaning and engaging. So it was an 8-day program, and it was transformational, because they were working at the level of what does it mean to be human? How do we function in systems as human beings with a spiritual foundation or not, and a relationship with religion or not? And that separation between religion and spirit or soul was just really illuminating. And that's where we met in the GRC. And I've taken that onward in the work over the last 20 years. And it's helped me to find a way of being that's not necessarily about languaging, but being able to be in my totality, in the roles I occupy. That's a start. I'll come back to some more, but
I think for me, as I was thinking about this afternoon, so many of the jobs that are going to be protected almost in an age of AI are going to be the ones that are most human. And human fragility is impacted by our unconscious, all of the conversations that bubble up from time to time. So the distraction of the spirit, the relationship with each other, and the impact of those who have power to design how our societies and our place of work. So work like this has to scale in my mind for us to have the good work that you talk about and the good society moving forward. And I don't think it's something that can be ignored as soft in the future.
Eleanor, you work with social activists and people who are fighting the good fight against oppressive kind of work about for the environment. What's your experience of?
Yeah, and the contestation of the experience of death, no, and transformation. That was one of the things I was thinking in the connection. But yeah, it's interesting for me because, it's easy for me to sort of fall into a conceptualization of work as like the place you go where somebody else has a project and you do this thing of participation and you receive a wage or whatever, and that's the contractual nature of it. And I guess that's where many people are engaging and what work will bring for them. And yet I'm working with communities of people who are often coming together not paid. Sometimes not because they want to, but because they feel that they have to in order to contest something and a change that they want to see. And it brings a different relationship and a different potential to that experience of working together. And it also brings to life that contestation of kind of being alive and what does it mean when you're having to kind of come together to organize around, okay, well, we're here willingly and voluntarily, and then you see the spaces of what soul and spirit and intention mean in those places. And I think you asked about like where do you see soul, and for me it's, and it happened this in the last 3 days, it's kind of where we are when we are holding and witnessing each other in that process of trying to understand that project of what does it mean to participate, and what does it mean to live, and what does it mean to show up, and how does that, friction is a word that we've explored a lot, and like how does that, and what's the energy that gets created out of that necessary friction that doesn't happen if we don't come into relationship, but how do you do it so that it's not so painful we can't stay there? And I've really been trying to understand this week about what enables us to be in the space where the friction can be present but not so painful that it
splits. Yeah, that's really interesting. I shared early on in this event about the most important soul work I've ever done, and it was unpaid work parenting children. And as a single parent, my son, and I've also been surprised at where you find soul at work. So I've worked in the humanitarian sector, met some amazing people, doing some amazing work, and also experienced a huge amount of toxic behavior. I've worked in financial banks where I'm coaching some executive and they're talking about their soul at work and they're doing something really generous to one of their team members who's had a bereavement or going through something, you know. So we often kind of think, oh, that's where the soul's going to be, in the good places, and it's not in the, but you know, the not so good places. And actually the ecosystems don't define where soul is or isn't, you know. It's in there and it's relational. I think this is another thing we try to discuss. Perhaps we could talk a bit about the soul being relational. That might be helpful.
Yeah. So I think on the relational part, what we tend to do is to try and split things off because everybody wants to be, they hear your phrase, the good society and the good life, and they want to be good, which means all the bad stuff has to go somewhere else. It's got to be buried or hidden. But if we look at, you know, our first global corporation, and this, you know, we're in an offshoot of it here, the Catholic Church, they've done some horrendous things within the boundary as well as doing some beautiful things. And so how do we live with the light and the dark together? And I think that's about holding the possibility that the world is much darker than we think and simultaneously, paradoxically, much lighter than we think. And so there's, I think, a call for us who are working at Soul at Work to be able to navigate the depths of things that are not as clear as they might appear.
I mean, that the soul and being, the direct and frequent link of the soul being something inherently good. And if it's soulful or it's spiritual, then there's something good in that, and there's an enlightening of that. I find that assumption really alive in my system regularly, and something that I'm like, but, you know, and you said a few weeks ago something about, like, you were probing whether actually everybody had a soul. And then you said, and you know, maybe not everybody does have a soul. And then you said, is that actually a bad thing? And is soul neutral? Is it good? Is it, and what is it? If it's in this relational thing for each other, what is the invitation when I come into relationship with you? That, because if we're also thinking about soul not being something that is ours, but resides within us and moves between us, thank you. How do we hold the relationship of that mirror? And in activist communities, it's so painful at the moment about how much we are identified by the physical container that we show up in and how that informs the labels and the behaviours that we're ascribed to and the roles we're allowed to hold or not hold and the things we're allowed to do and that we're not allowed to do and how we, that the sense that the soul is something that is collective for me is sometimes quite liberatory, but then I try to understand how we do that knowing that it's not pure. And how do I hold the not purity in you knowing that it's mine?
I mean, I think you're right. We imbue soul. It's a heavy burden for soul to carry, actually. It's kind of like everything good, everything, you know. It's like, do we put everything in there? And I find really helpful for me has been learning over the decades more and more about different indigenous communities and how they conceive of consciousness or soul and spirit and so on. And also in the transpersonal model that what you might call soul or the higher self or whatever sits on the boundaries, which are porous anyway, because we are all porous, between the universal or the collective and the individual. So there's a kind of like almost like a two-way energy going. And more that I've learned, particularly through one of our colleagues, Michelle McMahon, from what we call Australia, from the Yorta Yorta people there, how we draw on soul. Soul is there to nourish us if we care to see it, to hear it when it comes knocking on the door. It often comes knocking on the door in a crisis, but it's there, it's in the rivers and the mountains and the worlds that we live in. And I find that kind of, it's just a much lighter way to engage with it rather than I've got to, you know, if I'm going to be soulful, I have to be very significant and talk in a kind of quiet voice and say prayers and be in special places and whatever, you know. It's there whether you like it or not, whether we care to listen and hear. And I don't know, that's sort of where I kind of go with that one, Simon.
Yeah. You introduced yourself as a QPR fan, and you know, we talked football. I was a Bristol Rovers fan, you're a QPR fan, and we kind of ran with the crowds, and you're still going to the matches. But in these in these large groups of people, passionate, do you experience soul there? What's your experience?
Actually, I probably experience more soul there.
Yeah, I thought you said that.
than in actual life. One of the things we discussed over the last couple of days was how we used to sing at work together. And thousands of strangers come together and sing together still. And there's a unity, community feeling. One of the exercises we did this last few days was to spend time thinking about our individual spirituality, our individual soul. And what emerged was we each had origin stories, be that organized religion, a view of how nature and the relationship with nature, or some purpose-driven, but we each a story emerged for each of us. And there was something about being seen, at least for me, helped sharpen what my spirituality, my soul purpose was, because I felt seen in this workshop. And I wonder how we bring, going back to the workplace and maybe away from QPR, how we enable everyone to feel seen, because these are not conversations that naturally occur in day to day. These are not conversations that occur in the daily workplace. And one of the unique things, I'll go back to the kind of almost tribal society of following a football club, is that on the away days, the days when you travel together with strangers, you will discuss who you really are, because almost this sacred space is created, not dissimilar to this, and it might amuse some of the viewers to think that a group of football fans traveling for 4 hours on a train talk about spirituality. But there's something about connections that are made that are uniquely human, which is why these experiences are so sticky. There's something about the sacred space. We've all had to travel to a convent in Spain to create a sacred space. And I'm curious about how we scale this to everyday practice in the workplace.
Can I join two things? So when you talked about the activism working with the attributions, meaning made to the body, and when you talked about the connection that you experience in football, there's something for me that is really curious about how we work through our physiological realities. So, you know, we're incarnated primarily in becoming two varieties, innies and outies, but then there's this whole spectrum of ways of being that our medical professions struggle with because they're working in binaries, so it's either or. And I remember saying to somebody once whose daughter was wanting to transition to be a man, and I said, how do we know that she wasn't meant to be a tree? You know, she knew she was in the wrong body, but why should it be that she should then be in a male body? Maybe she was a dog or a horse or something. But those ideas were not possible to be thought about. It was just, well, you're human, so you must be either or. And I think to think soulfully might open up other resources for us, that we can have relationships with other earthlings, the mountains, the trees, the rivers, in a way that is equalizing and might shift our extractive ways of being with them. You know, everything is a product that you've got to suck the life out of.
But we only think that's extraordinary because of the tram lines of thought that we've been inculcated with, you know, and the cultures we belong to. There's a lovely indigenous academic called Enrique Salmon from the Sierra Madre, and he talks about kin centricity, that when you take kin as being the center of everything, then you are kin with everything. It would certainly change the way we relate to the planet, and move, you know, would help us move from an extractive to a much more healthy relationship. And you know, if you see soul everywhere, it becomes both everyday and sacred. You know, I'm not at all surprised that that's a sacred space that you create with the QPR fans. It doesn't have to be a church or a mosque or a synagogue or a temple. We can create sacred spaces if we wish to do so. And it could be a mountain or a river. I mean, it's a small jump to make, but it requires a huge shift in mindset from separation, us human, to, you know, from his story, which is pyramidal, to our story, which is interconnected and interdependent.
We start to make different ethical choices.
Yeah.
As we go down that road as individuals, as workers, as corporations, when we start to think differently.
I think we would. And another, just wanted to bring in, somebody else talked about this, I found very beautifully and movingly, about the concept of attending to. And I was thinking, as a practice, as an action, it's both very small and very revolutionary to actually attend to the other. And we could do this in the workplace. We do it. I mean, it's part of our jobs, isn't it? And there'll be many coaches and leaders listening to this or watching this. Just taking that little bit extra time, and that within that attention, the attending to, which contains the lovely, if you parse it, you know, break it down, to tend, to take care of, and to tender, to give. And for me, that was a real revelatory moment, that the soul doesn't belong to me or you. It happens between us. It happens, the spark, the firefly, the butterfly, these were all metaphors. Yeah.
But now we need to talk about the demons.
Yeah.
Whose mission is
they
to
happen
grab
between
our
us
attention.
Too.
Well, but they want our attention, don't they?
Yes,
and so
they do.
There is a drive to keep us from attending.
Yes.
By trying to harvest
Absolutely.
Attention. And I think that's difficult, because often what they offer looks like fun. It's recreation. It's Netflix and
the dopamine hits, social media. Absolutely.
It makes you feel good in a world that's increasingly horrific to look at. So we're in this delicate dance of how do we, you talked about toxicity earlier, but how do we really work with toxicity that looks like gold and fluffy bunnies?
And what is toxicity? I mean, it's when I was a nurse back in the day, I recalled earlier about how I saw the soul for the first time. I actually experienced the soul for the first time in its absence, because it had left the body, and it was like a striking for me. But the other thing I experienced in the hospital was these, I call them bodhisattvas, these people who seem to be enlightened and don't go off to nirvana, but they stay and they keep doing work. But these people were not some of these great nurses, it was the cleaners. The cleaners in those hospitals were amazing. The relationships they had with the patients, tending them, caring them, and they had time in those days. They weren't on the gig economy getting paid a kind of a below rate and had to get the cleaning done within 2 hours. They had time to clean and be with the patients. And it was healthy, because the ward was actually very clean, and but their relationship, the porters and the cleaners were just like, they were the mycelium of the hospital, which kept it going. And they kept the nurses going and the doctors going with their warm words and their, and perhaps in our economy, I've been thinking quite a lot about those working in the service industry. We noticed them during COVID, but those people in the coffee shops, the baristas are absolutely kind of fundamental to keep lots of other workers going, with a smile, with a warm word. You know, it's a very generous kind of way of being, but we kind of miss that, because we're all in such a rush quite often.
I have a similar theory around taxi drivers. Yes,
they're the therapists of the road.
Yeah, they share a story. They ask you about your story. They observe life, and they can change your mood, bring enlightenment, give care. Infuriate, but there's a spirit in those roles. I agree.
Well, it's nice that you brought in spirit, because one of the conversations we've been having, you know, is does soul have to be all pink and fluffy? Some taxi drivers bring a lot of spirit in. It can be, as you say, you know, full of rage or anger, but it's alive, isn't it? You're alive.
Is there something for you all where spirit and soul can get located beyond emotion? Because I find it limiting to think that soul and spirit are confined to emotion, and yet that's often where I find myself referencing soul and spirit from. And I don't know if it's because emotion is like just so bound up with the existence of being, and our kind of soulful interactions often seem to come in these moments of when we're able to be in relationship with each other, and the fact that that time is fleeting and brief will transform, and we don't know what that ultimate transformation will be. And that's an emotional thing. But is soul emotion? I'm not.
I wonder if there was something that came out of one of the conversations today that said there was something in the act of being witnessed and being really listened to in a way that we don't normally listen, that made something possible. And somebody made an association to the word womb and matrix, which have both been quite occupying concepts. And maybe soul is about spaciousness, that in which those things can be encountered. So it's like the container which contains.
The association I make with that is the word essence, that someone has seen through the stories, the persona, the performance, the many sub-personalities I have, you know, whom I presented to, and seen something essential that somehow endures, you know, from the past, the present, the future, the sort of sense that of something. You know, we've used words like, you know, it's hard to talk about. There's something ineffable about all of this, isn't it? And it's, I can hear myself sounding really pompous and grandiose as I'm talking about it, and I apologize. You know, how does one talk about these things?
But we had 350-plus executives saying they saw each other as three children.
Yeah.
Didn't they? I mean,
yeah.
And that wasn't prompted. They didn't
say. It wasn't. And I wonder if what is being seen is some sort of essence that goes beyond the, I don't know.
There's a story I want to share that you prompted for me. I was in Florida, Fort Lauderdale, in a taxi. And he told me about something that happened the night before. He was driving past a crossroads, and he looked to his left, and there was a man kneeling, three or four men round him with a gun to the head. And he reversed, pulled up, walked out, and as he got out of his taxi and walked towards the man, he started to pray out loud. And he walked into the scene and put his hands on top of the man who was about to be executed and just prayed. And the gunman walked away. And to me, that was soul at work. Yeah, he saved a life. He was at work. There was something where he was acting not out of emotion, but in purpose. He said he wasn't a particularly religious person, but there was something about his spirit that caused him to act in the moment. Now, you might just call that humanity, but I think that's what we've been talking about for the last few days.
Which reminds me of someone talking about the choice, not in these days, but someone, I didn't understand it when it was told to me before, but that was a choiceless choice. You know, we could say he moved with great courage, but I bet he didn't think about it for very long. I bet he just did it. He chose to act. And I wonder if that's something to do with soul, is that we don't have a choice about when it appears. It comes in the weirdest places.
I think rather than choice, one thing I've noticed here is that noticing is very important. So noticing is, when I was going through, I've shared my story of grief with people here. When I was going through a very deep grief, the thing which kept me alive actually was noticing moments of grace. Just one a day. I needed one moment of grace a day to keep me going, and that was a soulful moment. And that could have been a beautiful bird who I saw as the soul of my son, or it could have been a hug off a stranger when I was crying on a bus, or it could have been just by the River Thames and finding a beautiful piece of pottery. It could have been animate or inanimate. It could have been human or animal. But moments of grace, and for me, that was like the soul at work around me, not within me, not some deep soul within me, but around me. And I, being available to notice it was essential. And I think I've heard that in people's stories today, like, you know, people really listened to me, and then I noticed something about my story. So I think that's important.
So it's that listener-receiver you were ready to receive.
Now imagine if we could get all of the chief execs of the FTSE 500 here or somewhere similar to be really listened to. You know, they're so used to being on broadcast.
I was thinking of a more powerful group, the AI developers who are writing code.
Them too.
That will probably have a bigger impact on our lives, but for them to attend a workshop like that and to be more connected, more in choice, and the impact that might make.
But given that we might not get hold of them...
We might.
We might not. We might, but we might not as well. There was something that for
Chris's
me...
Chris's way is
good. Connections, great.
Make it work.
There was something that you were saying around purpose, and I was like, yeah, and so much of work, and the word work and the word purpose gets so enmeshed into each other, you know, but it's like, if soulful moments come from when we are just given purpose, and that's when we experience grace, because we're acting with purposeful intention, it feels like that purposeful intention either needs to move towards something that is a mirror of our humanity or comes from our humanity, our aliveness. And then what's the question that we ask ourselves about, so we could imagine how great it would be to get those that we ascribe as positions of power. But if we really asked ourselves that question about, with me, with my power in this moment, what would I do with that? That's the kind of question that gets me in the morning and in the evening and sometimes in the afternoon. It drives you mad. It does drive you also... can take us to some very difficult places. And so there is something also in the grace well, I think when you were talking, we were connecting about the sort of, how do we explore it from places that aren't just our mind and our words?
I think what you're saying is triggering something in me around, you know, there's a lot of talk about intentional communities, intentional kind of behaviours, purpose, and yeah, that's one path. And we need to be intentional, and we need to kind of think in that way. And also we need to just be and let go of the purpose, the goals, the targets, the intentions. And that's when I usually notice on the edge of my vision, on the edge of my emotion, on the edge of my chair, a moment of grace or someone's kind of connectivity. So there's a contemplative and there's the active. And
I mean, there are many paths, right?
Many paths.
There's no one path. I mean, the other word that needs to come in here is joy, which is not having fun or being successful or all of those things could be, but pure joy is actually a very revolutionary moment. I don't even know whether it's an emotion. It's a whole bundle of things. And
have you tasted it?
I have tasted it. I have tasted joy. Not enough these days. There's a lot to be despairing about. But I connect with that when you talk about moments of grace, that if you're receptive, if you're in open mode rather than on broadcast, you know, sometimes they just come in the most unexpected moments, don't they?
One of my favorite books is called A Course in Miracles. Have you heard of it? It was a Columbia University psychology professor, Jewish, who got a message, an act of grace, that she was channeling in something that dictated a book to her. So she wrote the book. It's called A Course in Miracles. And it was the dictation apparently came from Jesus. This is the what was said. But she wrote this book, which horrified her. You know, she's a proper academic with a proper scientific credential getting this message. Anyway, she writes this book. And one of the lessons, that's 365 lessons, one for each day of the year. And lesson 154 is called, In My Defenselessness, My Safety Lies, which is so radical. Mm. Most of us live in, we're defending even before something's happened. We're holding on to our sense of identity. We're holding on to our roles. We're holding on to our belongings. And to think that it's possible, and I think that's what the witnessing, I think we touched this weekend, in the presence of witnessing, defenselessness was possible. And so we were able to see beyond the stories solidified in these bodies, and we accessed something, which was the soul at work. And I think that's what excites me. And I don't know if I can call it joy, but I think there's a window opens.
And that's a nice way for us to end this episode of Edgy Ideas podcast. But we end every episode with the question of what it means to live a good life and create a good society. And I think, you know, witnessing is your contribution to that, Leslie. Do my other guests have any contributions just to add before we close this down?
I guess one for me, I shared it in our subgroup yesterday, but an idea that faith brings bravery, the ability of humans to act without certainty as an act of courage comes from a sense of spirit, a sense of something beyond yourself. And this idea that progress is absolutely tied up with belief.
Thank you.
I'll buy that one, but I'll add, I like that. I'll add this thing of attending to. I want to attend to with greater attention and greater courage and be open to moments of grace, more moments of grace.
I don't know, I'm just contemplating your invitation to let go of defence and where that would all take us. I think for a lot of us, stepping into this space in the last 3 days has been a little bit of that, and it certainly felt good. So if the good life is the invitation to walk towards one's own defences, then...
Go for it. Okay, well, thank you all very much. It's been great having you here, and thank you all for listening.